It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a policy expert tells us about the 50% funding cut proposed for public transportation in the state's two biggest cities. First, President Biden met with Russian President Vladimir Putin earlier today in Geneva. President Biden said his goals were clear: to stabilize the relationship between Russia and the U.S.
President Putin and I had share a unique responsibility to manage the relationship between two powerful and proud countries. A relationship that has to be stable and predictable.
It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. We'll check out that Biden-Putin meeting to start, plus the latest on infrastructure negotiations, voting laws, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the president's trip abroad and the G7 summit? What do you want to see when it comes to a relationship between the U.S. and Russia? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Reed Wilson is a national correspondent at The Hill. Reed, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, fresh news today with this Biden-Putin meeting. They each held their own press conferences after. A lot of people looking into the symbolism of how they did things and what they said. Bar was pretty low, as I'm hearing in the news. What do you make of what came out of this so far?
Well, this looked like another sort of reset meeting that every administration tries to do with Russia, or at least every administration in the post-Cold War era, the Vladimir Putin era, has tried to hold with Russia. President Biden was aiming to deliver some pretty substantial messages to Vladimir Putin. I don't think there were very high expectations in what either side hoped to get out of this. It was notable that President Putin came out of the meeting talking positively about President Biden and the messages he'd received. They both sort of hinted at the tensions that still exist over things like cybersecurity threats and the human rights record that Russia's sort of abysmal human rights record. The President Biden seemed to offer some almost veiled threats. I mean, at one point he said that he'd told President Putin, you know, how would you feel if your cyber infrastructure were attacked? Which sure sounded to me like, boy, that's a nice cyber infrastructure there. Would be a shame if anything happened to it.
Now, looking at this through the lens of American politics, obviously a lot of domestic issues, a lot of domestic priorities for the Biden administration still in the works. We're going to be spending a lot of our time talking about those. Reed, what do you make of this step out to the international stage while all this is going on at home?
This is almost the area where President Biden is more comfortable than he is in the domestic side. Remember, he spent a long time as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. One of his big pitches during the Democratic primary back in 2020 was that when he got to the world stage, he wouldn't have to be introduced to a lot of world leaders because he knows them and has these relationships. He tried to demonstrate that over the weekend at both the G7 summit in the UK and then a NATO meeting in Brussels. And I mean, this is where President Biden knows probably more about foreign policy, American foreign policy in the Cold War and post-Cold War era than almost any other politician alive. So this is his bread and butter. And he seemed more comfortable on that international stage than he does at times on the domestic stage.
We're going to talk more about the U.S. and Russia tomorrow on the show. Right now, it's The Week in Washington. Reed Wilson is with us, national correspondent at The Hill, looking at some big stories coming up, infrastructure and voting rights laws. You can join in with your thoughts and questions on those topics right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Perennial negotiations on infrastructure spending continue. What do you want to see happen? Do you want to see federal voting rights legislation that's supported by many, but not all, Democrats to pass? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lot of threads, Reed, when it comes to infrastructure negotiations. I want to start with one of them and give a listen to West Virginia Senator Republican Shelley Moore Capito on the infrastructure package. Here's Senator Capito talking to Fox News.
I am extremely disappointed because we offered the president basically what he asked us to do the first time we met with him, which was $1 trillion over 8 years, including baseline spending, and that it wouldn't include a tax increase. And that was our red line, not his. And the last offer that I got from the president had 4 tax increases in it.
So that's Reid, one of the threads that kind of wrapped up negotiations between Capito and some other Republicans directly with the White House. So who are we watching now trying to scramble to come up with some kind of infrastructure plan?
Well, I always joke that Capitol Hill is rife with gang activity. So the Capito, the Shelley Moore Capito gang has been sidelined for the moment. And now the White House is talking to the Bill Cassidy gang. He's a Republican from Louisiana. Also, members like Mike Braun from Indiana, some other members there. Susan Collins, of course, in the middle of that Republican mix. And it looks like this latest offer that at least 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats have agreed to would increase spending by about $1.2 trillion over the next 8 years. About $600 billion of that is new spending. The other $600 is, you know, money that gets sort of shuffled around. And this is something that it looked as if there was an opening for, but that opening closed pretty quickly when the progressive senators like Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut came out and said they couldn't vote for a bill like this because it doesn't address climate change issues to their satisfaction. That makes the effort to get to the 60 vote threshold that you need to advance a bill all the more difficult because now that Democrats would have to win over 13 Republican votes instead of just 10. And remember, they started with only 5 in that group of 10 bipartisan senators negotiating. So it's difficult to see how they get there at this point. Now we've seen Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer say today that he's going to hold a special conference meeting with his Senate Democrats to start talking about going bigger and going alone. And that would mean using what's called the reconciliation process, which is a process that would only require 51 votes to advance. And of course, Democrats have 50 votes in the Senate plus Vice President Kamala Harris to break any ties. That's a little touchy, though, because some of the centrist politicians like Shelley Moore Capito's seatmate Joe Manchin, Senator Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, have voiced some concerns about doing that sort of go-it-alone approach. We'll see if something gets done. We've got, 2.5 weeks until the July 4th recess. Usually the way Congress works, in my experience, is that nothing happens up until the very last possible minute when everything gets jammed through real fast. So we'll see what Congress thinks is the real last minute. Is that right before the July 4th recess? Is it right before the August recess where they're gone for a longer period of time? Infrastructure talks, though, they've been more sort of stop and go traffic, if you will, to keep on the infrastructure theme.
You mentioned the concerns about climate provisions from progressive Democrats. Here's Massachusetts Senator Edward Markey speaking here on Friday on that issue.
We can't have an infrastructure bill in 2021 that doesn't have climate at its center. And any other bill that we are going to consider that does not have aggressive solutions to the climate crisis will just have that response, which I've been giving, which is no climate, no deal.
No climate, no deal, Reid. That's just one of many stumbling blocks on this thing.
Yeah, and this brings up the notion that, you know, in a caucus of 50 votes, when they're, you know, in a 100 member body, in a 50 vote majority, there are 50 majority leaders. Everybody gets to be that deciding vote. And that, of course, makes everything more complicated when you're trying to figure out how to get to the 50 votes and keep all of, you know, herd all of the cats, if you will, which is a difficult thing to do under normal circumstances, and even more difficult in this political environment. And when you're talking about a 1.2 or more trillion dollar bill.
Reid, everybody seems to agree that they want something on infrastructure. I mean, going back to former President Trump's first days in office, this is the one thing that Trump and Democrats were going to be able to work together on. Here we are. He's out. Next guy's in. And still nobody's agreeing on an infrastructure deal. Is this just a never-ending story? Do you see any kind of resolution coming?
You know, there's an old saying in Washington that infrastructure is the last bipartisan area of agreement. I'm not sure that's true anymore because the two sides now define infrastructure so differently. I mean, Republicans see infrastructure as, you know, roads, bridges, and ports. Democrats see infrastructure much broader. They want to include conversations about rural broadband and, the infrastructure of families and climate, for that matter, which is obviously something that Republicans have never been terribly willing to talk about in a big bill like this. So, the old trope was that everybody's for infrastructure because that means everybody gets something for their own district. It was no accident that the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee was always the biggest committee in the House of Representatives. Everybody wanted to be on it because everybody wanted a bridge named after them in their own district. Nowadays, that's not really the case anymore. You know, blame the death of earmarks, blame the hyper-partisanship, or blame this very fundamental difference in how the two sides, define the word infrastructure. But the fact is, the old areas of agreement, they're just not working anymore.
Talking to Reed Wilson, national correspondent at The Hill. He's helping us break down the news from Washington. Coming up, voting rights laws. A lot of states making changes, some making things tougher in some ways to vote, things like absentee ballot restrictions, some states loosening things up, Democrats saying they need to pass something at the national level, also running into roadblocks, and not just from Republicans. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Congress pass a voting rights bill that would maybe make it harder for states to restrict access to voting? Do you not want to see that happen? Should things be left to states? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Reed Wilson, national correspondent with The Hill. And we're looking at some of the top stories in national politics coming up. Voting rights. Should Congress pass something? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And we've got this going on at the national level, Reed. I know you focus a lot on what's going on in states, though. And I want to start here with this review, is what some people are calling it, of the voting, the presidential voting in Arizona's biggest county. A lot of Republican lawmakers, including some from Wisconsin, going there, and one, I believe, Reed Wilson went there to check it out. What did you see?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So what has happened is the Arizona State Senate, which is run by a pretty hardcore faction of Republicans, has demanded an audit of Maricopa County's votes, almost 2.1 million votes cast in the 2020 election. President Biden won Maricopa County by about 45,000 votes. He won the state of Arizona by about 10,000 votes, and becoming the first Democrat since Bill Clinton to carry the state's electoral votes. President Trump has pushed the lie that there was malfeasance in the election, and to try to prove that, these Arizona state senators have demanded a recount in the face of loud objections from the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, which is a 4-1 Republican majority, and the Maricopa County Recorder, who is a Republican who actually won election in the very 2020 election that the state Senate wants to look into. And it's a real bizarre scene. It's not something that we've ever seen before. Post-election audits are common, and as a matter of fact, every state and every county audits their elections afterwards before they certify the election results to make sure nothing went wrong. Well, Arizona and Maricopa County audited their own elections, decided that nothing went wrong, but the state Senate is not willing to do that. Instead of hiring an auditor with any experience in auditing elections, they hired a Florida company called Cyber Ninjas, a cyber defense company, the cybersecurity company, that, again, has no experience auditing elections and also was involved in pushing some of the false rumors about widespread violations. And what I was seeing in Arizona is more and more Republicans getting really anxious about what this audit was doing to their own brand and to their own hopes of winning back elections in 2022 or 2024. You know, one of the things that we've seen in the post-election sort of weeks and months is that Republicans are in pushing the lie that there was voter fraud in the election, they are undermining confidence in the election among their own voters. One of the big reasons that the two Georgia senators won, the Georgia Democrats won in that January runoff, is because a lot of Republicans decided not to vote, not to show up to cast ballots in an election they didn't believe in. So I was talking to a couple of state senators down there. The state House Majority Leader basically rolled his eyes when I asked him about the audit. He said, look, there's a reason that we haven't been involved in that. It's only the state Senate and only these hardliners. Now that the count has finished up, they haven't issued any report, which makes me think that they didn't find anything to actually report. But they are still engaged in this really bizarre exercise in examining the very paper on which the ballots were cast. There was a rumor going around a while ago that they were looking for, and I say a rumor on the floor, this was actually reported in the Arizona Republic and some other places, that they were looking for things like bamboo within the ballot because of rumors that there had been ballots flown in from South Korea or China. Just these bizarre conspiracy theories that have taken over. And one of the things that is intriguing, you know, it's not just legislators from Wisconsin who are coming to watch. I found legislators from 10 states, all Republicans across the country who are going to Arizona to check this out. And in a couple of cases, they have returned to their home states calling for audits of their own elections. So you might imagine that some of the Republican legislators who went down from Wisconsin last week might come back and start calling for audits of votes in Wisconsin. Now, once again, I think it's important to remind everybody, audits are completely common when they're conducted by people who actually know how to audit an election. In the Maricopa case, that's just not what's happening.
That's just one state. Democratic lawmakers in Texas walked out to stop a vote on election changes there. A similar story is going on around the country. So that has eyes on Congress, Reed. What are Democrats trying to do when it comes to voting bills? What kind of stumbling blocks have they hit?
So Democrats have passed two bills through the House. One is called the For the People Act. The other is called the John Lewis Act. They are different approaches to overhauling the nation's elections. And they're running into challenges from those very Democrats that we talked about on the infrastructure bill, specifically Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, who's not willing to nuke the filibuster or anything like that in order to pass these voting rights. Just a few hours ago, Manchin released a list of electoral changes that he would be willing to vote for. And that may begin the process of some kind of conversation among Democrats. However, it looks increasingly unlikely that the Dems are going to be able to get to the 60 votes they need in the Senate because they're not going to find a lot of Republicans who are willing to go along with this. This goes back to sort of a 10th Amendment issue here. You know, we don't have one central administrator of elections in the United States. We're unique in the sort of Western free democracy world in that we have 51 different election administrators in our states and the District of Columbia. And as a matter of fact, in a state like Wisconsin, you've got, gosh, something like 3,000 different electoral authorities, whether it's towns or counties or cities or anything like that, who actually run the elections. And in all these different states, there are all these different rules that govern how easy it is to get access to the ballot. So Republicans will say, look, this is an issue that the states are better equipped to handle in terms of their own rules and procedures for voting. The Democrats will say, wait a second, we need to have a national standard for how easy it is to vote and how these votes are conducted. And the fact is, that's an argument that is almost impossible to bridge simply because they come from such different starting places.
Talking to Reed Wilson from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national news. Reed, I want to take a look now, again, back at the 2020 elections, emails coming out from between the elections and Inauguration Day from the president's team to Department of Justice officials looking to put pressure on and pursue some claims of fraud. What did we learn?
these are pretty remarkable. So the Trump administration was pressuring the Justice Department to effectively come up with evidence for fraud that would undermine confidence in the integrity of the election. Let's remind ourselves, this came after the Trump administration officials themselves called the election the most safe, most secure elections ever conducted in American history. This, you know, all what the Trump administration was doing in its final days was trying to undermine the very notion that he might have lost an election that he very clearly lost by a very wide margin in states like Wisconsin, by wider margins than he won 4 years previously. So this is more evidence of troubling behavior by the Trump administration. We haven't seen a lot of efforts by Democrats in Congress to conduct the oversight that they might have had Trump remained in office. And that's raising some concerns among good government types who wonder, you know, whether or not by allowing this behavior to go unchecked and undisclosed, whether or not we're opening ourselves up for, the next time.
And Attorney General Merrick Garland now runs that Department of Justice. Has he responded to this pressure on his predecessors?
Yeah, there is an open investigation now in Congress, at least. It looks like some Democrats in Congress are going to hold hearings into this. Merrick Garland had, well, the Justice Department official who oversees the division that would have sort of made him aware of this has resigned. It's not clear to me whether that was Merrick Garland firing him or not, or if this guy was just resigning at the end of what was anticipated to be the end of his tenure. But at least one head has rolled in the Justice Department. And you can imagine some pressure on the Justice Department to get to the bottom of this, especially after 4 years in which the White House acted like the Justice Department was the president's personal legal team. Now we've got a new president who has picked an attorney general who he wants to be independent and has been independent enough that it has actually caused headaches for the White House. You know, how is this White House going to bring the pressure to bear on their own attorney general when they've said they want their own attorney general to be independent?
Reed, in just our last half a minute or so, a lot going on. Obviously, what is the big story you're watching for in the following week?
Whether or not we can get an actual infrastructure bill done, whether Joe Manchin's list of demands on voting rights are going to actually pan out into any kind of agreement. Congress always seems to back up into the very last corner and pass everything they possibly can at the last minute. When is that last minute? Is it right before the July 4th recess or right before the August recess?
Reed, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
Reed Wilson is a national correspondent at The Hill. He joined us for a weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.